Fred Wesley Jr. has built his career on small, tough decisions. Consider just one. It was 1967. Fred Wesley was an out-of-work musician, so discouraged that he decided to take his career in another direction. Fred Wesley applied for a job as a milkman. He got the job. It was a small but meaningful honor. He was going to be the first black milkman in the history of Mobile, Alabama. He got the uniform. He got ready to make his first milk run, and then he got a phone call. He got an offer to play trombone in the James Brown Band, so he had to choose. Milkman, James Brown. Milkman, James Brown. Milkman?
Can't pass the people, can't pass the hitman!
One more decision made. Today, Fred Wesley is known as a sideman who played with musicians from Ike and Tina Turner to Maceo Parker, but his new autobiography gives you a sense of how many times his life could have gone another way. Fred Wesley has come by to visit us, and he's brought his trombone. Mr. Wesley, welcome.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
I want to start. I'm going to be asking you about a lot of things in your life, but I want to start by asking about that particular decision when you were a young man in 1967. Doesn't sound like it'd be a hard decision between playing for James Brown and being a milkman, but...
Well, you know, I grew up to be a jazz snob. You know, if it didn't go ting, 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 like that, you know, it didn't mean a whole lot to me. I was into jazz, and so when you said James Brown, well, you know, me and my boys, we looked at James Brown. We used to call him, oh, you know, little screaming, howling sissy with all the makeup on his face. Yeah, yeah, that's all right, but that's not what we want to do, you know. And so when the job came down with James Brown, I said, so it wasn't an automatic decision, you know. But it was a choice between music, though it not be the music of my choice, or milk. I say I'll choose music over a truck full of milk, you know.
You grew up listening to jazz in your house, didn't you?
Oh, yeah, sure. Well, you see, my father had a big band. So my earliest memories of is listening to Nat King Cole and Duke Ellington, Count Basie, Louis Jordan. Every Wednesday, a big band would come set up in the living room and rehearse. And that's what I wanted to do.
I wonder if you could do me a favor. You got your trombone there. Could you play a couple of bars of something you remember from listening to your dad's big band as a kid?
Oh, okay. The first thing I ever played in the big band was a Stan Kenton arrangement of a tune called Intermission Riff.
This is something that your father's band played also. Why does it stay in your mind?
Because it was the first one. It was the first jazz look that I actually played. And plus, it was a great, you know, Stan Kenton Big Band. You ever heard it? I mean, it was a smoking band, you know, and that was the kind of music that I heard first, big band music. So it was never a doubt about what I wanted to do.
You went from listening to your father playing jazz to playing in marching bands, high school, college marching band, right?
When I got to, I think it was ninth grade, I joined the junior high school band. And the band teacher was Mr. E.B. Coleman. I was his star pupil. He got some brand new baritone horns in one day. Who wants to play the baritone? So naturally, his pet student, me, got to play one of the brand new sparkling silver beautiful baritone horns. The way I got the trombone is one day my father came home with a trombone and said, learn how to play this. I need one in the band.
Your dad signed you up. Yeah.
Yeah, so he said he figured I had come far enough to where he could actually trust me to play in his band. But I got my real training in the United States Army.
I want to get the order of this right, because mm-hmm. you played as a sideman to Ike and Tina Turner, and then enlisted in the Army after that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was in the Army where you learned how to play better music.
Yes. That's my first real trombone teacher was Joe Phillips, Chief Joe Phillips in the United States Army. He was a Navy guy, and he taught me things like diaphragmatic breathing and double tonguing and sight reading and general musicianship, you know.
Now, when you enlisted in the Army, they sent you to a munitions dump of some kind?
Well, it was Redstone Arsenal, and I thought it was a munition dump. You know, Redstone Arsenal is
that's a missile,
Marshall yeah. Space Flight yeah. Center. You know,
yeah.
But you know, at the time, I'm an Alabama person, so when they say Redstone Arsenal, now arsenal, that means a collection of weapons. That's what that means to me. You know, so that's why I wrote in a book that I thought maybe it was some kind of munition dump, and people who were stationed there were standing around with their guns, guarding the weapons. You know. But it was the actual, it was the Marshall Space Flight Center. And the band's major job there was to play for the graduation of people graduating from the missile school. However, we had the warrant officer, the chief, the bandmaster there was a gentleman by the name of Edmondson. Mr. Edmondson was an ex-lead alto saxophone player with the Les Elgard Big Band. And just so happened, I don't know if it was by design or just by happenstance, but a great band, a great drummer, a great trumpet section, a great trombone player, great reed section. What they needed was a trombone player that could play jazz solos. And they had requested for a trombone player that could play jazz solos. Guess who?
Reached out and got you.
There you go. And so although I was very disturbed about going there, I literally had a fit. I had a fit all over the parade ground. I mean, I almost hurt myself because I did not want to go back to Alabama. You know, I was leaving Alabama. But I went back to Alabama, and I found one of the greatest big band and some of the greatest people that I've ever known right there in that little one-horse town of Huntsville, Alabama.
I wonder if you can teach me a little more of your musical development here. Do you remember a few bars of something you played in the Army?
I'll tell you something that I blew it the first time I played, and I'll probably blew it now. This is Tommy Dawson. Stuff like that, you know, and it was a great experience.
And you ended up, because of this former big band leader who wanted you there, doing nothing but playing music in the United States Army, right? That was your whole job?
That was it. That was it. Well,
what else do you need?
Once a year, we did go to Anniston, Alabama, and we were the CBR team, the Chemical, Radiological, and Biological Weapons team for the arsenal. You know, during that time, it was sort of like a joke. Nobody really thought it would ever be anything serious, but we were responsible. If anything ever went wrong like that, you know, regarding chemicals or radioactivity or biological warfare, we were in charge of it.
The U.S. Army band was the first line of defense against chemical and biological weapons?
We would be the first one sent to Iraq to check out Saddam Hussein. Isn't that funny out there? Well, this was in 1965, 1966, you know. We knew how to put our gas masks on real fast, you know. We knew how to inject atropine into our system real fast. So we had it together, you know.
So you had different duties. Yeah. You got out of the military, and you faced that decision that we described at the beginning. You could not entirely give up music, but back away from music and become a milkman.
That's when that happened, yeah.
And I guess what strikes me about this whole story is you can see several times in your life when it might have gone a completely different way and you might have been a perfectly decent, honest citizen, but not the musician that you are today.
Some of us musicians are perfectly decent, honest citizens.
I didn't mean to say those were exclusive possibilities, but...
No, but there have been some turns that, I think we all face decisions, you know, that take us in one direction or another. But who knew that James Brown would record a record and say, "Hit me, Fred," you know, "Fred, blow right here." And all of a sudden, I am now the funk trombone player in the world. People say, "You're the funkiest trombone player in the world." I say, "All right, who's second funkiest?" You know, it was just that James Brown put that stamp on me. Of course, now I had to come up to it. You know, if I had he would say, "Hit me, Fred," and I want to get blah-dee-da-dee-da-da, that'd probably been the last time you ever heard it. But, you know, I came off kind of dynamic, you know, and so I am who I am because of that.
What was it like rehearsing with James Brown?
That was a pain, you know. A lot of times he would say, "Do something," and then I think that it's being done, and he would say, "No, that's not it." You know, if he say, "Do bop, beat up, bop," right? And then we do bop, beat up, bop. He said, "Nope, that's not right." It's bop, beat up, bop. So it was, oh, so we do bop, beat up, bop. Now, to me, this is all the same thing. To him, it's
it all sounded the same to me, I guess.
You know, but to him, he's hearing something else, you know, and this is very irritating to me, you know, because what you have to do is break the will of the people that's playing with you, you know. Instead of, my theory is not to break the will, but to use all the input from different creative minds and let it meld into a new thing, you know. That's my theory. But most people, especially real creative people, they want it exactly like they hear it in their brain. I just don't believe in it. I hate that, really. I hate that. But it works.
Is that what James Brown felt that he had to do to get his music out, was break the will of people?
Maybe so. And seeing how long his music has lasted and how much it has affected all music today, and you got to admit that his music has influenced every genre of music that we hear today, then maybe he was right, you know. I still didn't like it. It still was irritating to me and very boring to me and tiring, you know. I used to be exhausted after I got out of one of those races.
There does seem to be kind of a love-hate relationship with James Brown.
I don't hate James Brown at all. I really love what he's done for me as a musician. You know, he made me who I am. He changed my mind about a lot of things. You know, I'm not a jazz snob anymore. I have accepted my position as Funky Fred, you know, and he did this for me. He's like a father to me, you know. He invented me, you know. So it's not a love-hate. I hate to be around. He's a very boring person, you know. He's not a lot of conversation. You can't talk to him about football or about girlfriends or the weather. And he only talks about himself and his career, you know. And that gets very boring, you know.
If somebody goes to a record store or to their CD collection or whatever and looks at, they've got a CD, one of those CDs, it's like James Brown's 20 Greatest Hits or something like that. They're, depending on the exact lineup, there's probably going to be 4, 5, 6, 7 of those where Fred Wesley, where you are one of the people in the writing credits.
Yeah.
I'd like to listen to one of the songs that you recorded with James Brown. And this is one on which your trombone playing was especially featured. It's called Doing It to Death.
Oh, yeah, okay. I have to do that every night now, whether I like it or not.
Fred, can you take us higher? Take us higher.
Take him up, Fred. That's Fred Wesley from Pass the Peas, an album with Fred Wesley and the JBs, which included James Brown at that time, as we hear on that. As we hear on that. The big hand to Fred. All right. That's a song now that you have to play every night. It's one of your signature songs.
Yeah, you know, and that was such a perfect recording until it's actually a pain to play it now because it would never be that again. That's one of those once-in-a-lifetime grooves, you know. I guess if I listened at it and studied, I could play those exact notes again, but that groove will never be there again.
You're probably a different musician now than you were three decades ago, aren't you?
That's true. So is Jabbo. Jimmy Nolan is dead, you know, so that won't happen again.
How would you say you're a different musician than you were?
Well, like I said, I had accepted my position as a funk trombone player. Even when I play jazz now, I don't suppress the funk, you know. I know who I am now. I'm a funky player who can play jazz. I'm a jazz player who plays funk. So I just settle into who I really am, and I don't fight the feeling anymore.
I understand a few weeks ago in Virginia, you were playing with a marching band again.
Well, you know, a friend of mine, Barney Smart, he's the band master at Hampton University. So Barney invited me to come and play the halftime show with the Hampton University marching band. He had written out that solo that you asked me about, and I'm doing it there for the entire trombone section. So they played it way better than I can play it right now, you know. And we had a great time. We didn't get to go on the field. It rained all day, you know. Football players didn't want to be out there. So, you know, the band wasn't going out there and mess up the clean uniforms, you know.
Did they put you in a band uniform?
No, but I did wear my blue suit.
That must have brought back some memories.
Well, I was never actually in a band like that. But I've always admired those bands. And I admire these band masters that train these kids to do this stuff. And it's great that they have something exciting to do, you know, that's in a positive way.
Fred Wesley Jr. is the author of Hit Me Fred, Recollections of a Sideman. Yeah. And he's here in Studio 3A here in Washington, D.C. Mr. Wesley, thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Steve.